Hello once again and welcome to the Math of the Match podcast. I'm your host, Tim, and with me as always is my good friend,
Lawrence.
And Lawrence, it's time to talk about all that has happened this week in wrestling. Talk about the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, what's worth watching, and what you can just plain old skip. It's always a good time.
Always.
We rank everything on a 100-point system, and we do this because we have found many ranking systems online that make zero to no sense, and we're not about it.
Only shoot math here.
That's right, we're shooting on math. So, Lawrence, you take the beginning of the week, so you're going to kick us off with Raw. What do you got for us?
That's right. This is the March 4th episode of Monday Night Raw. We open the show with a Cody Rhodes promo. Pretty solid promo. I gave it an 83 out of 100.
Nice.
In this promo, we finally, after multiple weeks of not really having an explanation about what Cody and The Rock talked about prior to the slap heard around the world, we finally got some background on what they talked about and gave some clarity on the early portion of this storyline. So it was nice to finally get that. After we got some of that clarity, Rollins came out, they addressed The Rock's challenge to a tag match at Mania, and left the answer to that for Friday Night SmackDown. Yeah, decent segment to start the show. We also got the origin of a Diarrhea Dwayne chant.
I don't know why we got it, but we sure did.
Yeah, well, that's what we have now. So, we followed that
with... It's almost like they want Rollins to look a little goofy compared to everybody else. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. The Rock keeps calling him a clown emoji, so... But after this, we got our first match of the night between Gunther and Dominic Mysterio. This was a non-title match. I actually enjoyed this match quite a lot. I gave it a 90.
Sounds right.
Yep, when this was starting up, we got some acknowledgement on commentary from Michael Cole about Sting's retirement, which is...
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice when we can acknowledge that other things exist. Even if it's vague and not super direct, it's still nice to acknowledge that it happened.
For sure.
As I said, I gave this match 90. I felt like both of these guys were really laying in those chops. Dom was hanging in there with Gunther, who is notoriously a pretty strong chopper. And Gunther was selling for Dominic here early on. Dom was really playing up his wily heel tactics.
Dom's a great heel.
He is. Later on in the night, just as a follow-up to this, we got some backstage segment in medical where Judgment Day was... saying that they would handle Imperium and that they were going to send McDonough to handle Gunther since Gunther won this match. So, after this match...
Interesting choice.
Yeah, I can't imagine that McDonough is going to fare very well against Gunther, but keeps the story going, I suppose.
Yep, that it has to.
Our next match of the night was a tag match between Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler versus Caden Carter and Katana Chance. Stark and Baszler won this match. The match was fine. I give it a 71. It was pretty short. They did do a decent amount of stuff within that short time, but still short. Short, probably shorter than it should have been. And it was not quite a squash. After the match, Damage Control came out and got in the faces of Stark and Baszler. And it was pretty clear that the reason that we got that Dakota Kai turn on Bayley last week probably had mostly to do with having a mouthpiece and Damage Control.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense to me, thinking about it now.
Yeah, it's fitting. And, like, if she's still out on injury, it gives her something relevant to be doing. So, we followed that match with Becky Lynch versus Nia Jax, which Nia Jax won... for the second week in a row by disqualification.
Which I like.
Yeah. Yeah, they followed up last week's story by having this match, and they followed up last week's finish with the finish for the match from this week. I ended up giving this a 90. the DQ this time, obviously, was the reverse of the previous, which was Liv Morgan attacking Nia, whereas last week it was Becky attacking Nia. And then they followed this up once again afterwards with a confrontation between Liv and Becky. And I would not be shocked if we saw this whole back and forth kind of shake out into a triple threat or a fatal four-way at Mania. And I would not necessarily be upset by that, seeing as it's not the match that the Rumble winner is in. So it doesn't feel like somebody's getting screwed by having their singles match taken over by more people.
I agree. And if you're going to pull, it works two ways. If you're going to pull the belt off of Rhea, then she doesn't have to eat the pin. But also, she could just dominate the three top people at the time.
Right, and look like a world beater for it. So,
for sure, yeah.
Yep, solid match, solid storytelling. We followed this with another singles match, this one between Andrade and Apollo Crews. Andrade got the win, obviously, first match back. The match was all right. It was good to see Apollo. The crowd was pretty dead for most of this until Andrade pulled out the Three Amigos. And after that, they popped at least for the big moves. I ended up giving this a 72. They were saying on commentary the Hammerlock DDT, which I don't know that Andrade had a name for on his previous run. They were referring to it by his former name in CMLL, which is La Sombra. So that's cool that it has a name now.
That's really cool.
This was essentially just a squash match, a decent way to get Andrade back in front of the fans, start building him up for whatever they intend to be doing with him. I didn't grade. There were a couple of segments surrounding the next challenger for the Intercontinental Championship at Mania. I didn't grade any of the segments, but they're worth mentioning. All of it ultimately set up a gauntlet match for next week between Sami Zayn, Ricochet, Shinsuke, Bronson Reed, JD McDonagh, and Chad Gable.
That's going to be really good. There's a couple people I could see winning.
Yeah. And then after the match was announced, Ivar challenged Sami for later in the night, intending to destroy him and take his spot in the gauntlet match. So just some context for one of the matches later on this card. We followed up that match with Judgment Day's Damian Priest and Finn Balor versus Imperium. Ludwig and Giovanni Vinci, obviously, as Gunther was previously in action. This match was pretty good. I gave it an 83. It was wild to me how different the crowd response to the dynamic here was from the dynamic between Dominic and Gunther, where in the Dominic and Gunther match, even though they're both heels, Dominic was clearly supposed to be the heel. And then in this match, the crowd was firmly behind Judgment Day. It was just, you know, great stuff from Dominic managing to be more heel than the rest of his heel faction.
It's so true. Well, nobody can hate Finn, is what it is.
Judgment Day ended up winning this match, but it was pretty back and forth. It wasn't lopsided. We followed this with the Sami Zayn and Ivar match. This was a very good match. I gave it an 88. Sami did end up winning and is still going to be in the gauntlet match next week. On the way out to the ring for this match, Valhalla came out with the antlers that Michael Cole is so fond of, and she ended up putting them on his head. And he just popped like crazy for the antlers and wearing the antlers and literally wore them on commentary for the entire match, even though they interfered with his ability to wear a headset.
It was pretty good. I did see that. It was really good.
Yeah. Pat McAfee made the comment that Cole exploded all over himself, to which Cole questioned whether or not he could say that on TV.
He sure did.
This was solid. After this match, Chad Gable cut a very short backstage promo about his drive for the Intercontinental Championship as a man and as a father. And he cut that promo right to Gunther's face. So I would not be shocked to see Gable get the win next week and go to Mania. But there's definitely
I hope so.
Multiple contenders in that six-man match.
I think Gable feels the best, especially if you're going to pull the belt.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like the payoff that he deserves. And then our main event of the night was between Drew McIntyre and main event Jey Uso. Main event Jey Uso in a main event. This match was also very good. I gave this an 89. Drew ended up getting the win, but it came on the back of some more shenanigans from Jimmy. After the match, Rollins came down to save Jey from a beatdown by Jimmy and just kind of ran past McIntyre, and McIntyre dropped him for his insolence.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was quite good. So the overall score for Monday Night Raw was an 83.25. Last week I was rounding my numbers either up or down, but you were doing decimal points, so I decided I would do decimal points this week.
Yes. Well, you know what? It's funny. When I get to mine, they're first and second is literally fractions of a percent apart, so I'm glad I did it.
Sure. Yeah, mine are not quite that close. Moving on.
I have a problem.
Yeah, apparently. Moving on to NXT. This was the March 5th episode of NXT. There was an opening video package for this, kind of like what they do for PLEs. I didn't grade the video package, but it's worth noting that Lexus King was the speaker for the video package.
It's got a good voice.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that they want him to be important, even if he's not been quite as successful as I would hope that he'd be. So this was NXT Roadblock. Even though it was a TV episode, they were treating it kind of like a premium live event. The opening match for the show was Dijak versus Joe Gacy in an asylum match, which is essentially just a weaponized cage match. There's no escape. It's just pin and submission. So, but
was there a potted plant?
Was there a potted plant? No.
Yeah, the last time they did it, I'm pretty sure Dean had one.
No, I don't recall there being a potted plant in this match.
No,
there was a do not open box that had a spring loaded boxing glove in it that nutshotted Dijak.
The fact that exists makes me very happy.
Yeah, I thought you might appreciate that.
Right, let's just get full Looney Tunes with it, right?
Yeah, why not? The match was pretty good. I gave it an 83. The move of the match, I felt, was Dijak hitting a moonsault to Gacy from the top of the cage.
Nice.
And not even, like, to Gacy while he was standing where he could catch him. It was, like, full-on, like, moonsault with him completely prone.
Ooh, his poor knees.
Yeah, it looks like he might have not shot at himself on Gacy's shoulder when he came down.
Poor guy.
Yeah, twice in one match. But Gacy busted out a pretty solid move himself, doing a version of a Swanton bomb while wearing a straight jacket with both of his arms restrained.
Ooh, God.
Right?
So dangerous.
The crowd enjoyed this. They gave, when it was time for a This Is Awesome chant, they gave a This Is Crazy chant. Because it was an asylum match.
Oh, that's good.
The next match of the night was War Dogs versus Chase U in a title match. War Dogs ended up retaining. This match was okay. Decent as well. I gave it an 81. I didn't really expect the belts to change hands here. War Dogs have not been holding for very long. And until there is a spot for Breaker to... like, get a main card title, which won't happen until after Mania, for sure. It's probably correct to keep him relevant in NXT.
Yeah, I could see him around Mania dropping. Maybe they drop to the Good Brothers. That's about all I can see at
yeah.
the moment.
And that would probably be correct. And, like, if Chad Gable wins the Intercontinental Championship at Mania, then having Breaker attack him would not be a bad prospect.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The next match of the night was Sean Spears versus Uriah Connors. Uriah Connors being the name that has been given to the younger of Fit Finlay's sons that's with NXT.
Oh, nice. What, Brogan, I think his name is?
Yeah, it's Brogan.
Yeah.
This match was all right. It was essentially a squash. I gave it a 74. Obviously, you know, you've not heard the name Uriah Connors yet, and... Sean Spears just returned, so of course it was going to be a squash. But it was effective enough. Afterwards, Spears cut a promo about being a mirror for hypocrites in NXT and called out Ridge Holland. And when Ridge showed up, Spears goaded him into attacking him and seemed like he wanted him to hit him with a chair. And Holland threw down the chair and backed away looking conflicted. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with this character for Spears. I suspect that either this is a way to get Holland the rest of the way over, or they end up in some sort of faction.
That would be interesting.
So, I could see it going either way. We followed this with a women's tag team match for the women's tag titles between Lyra Valkyria and Tatum Paxley against the Kabuki Warriors. This match was decent as well. I gave it an 82. There was, you know, again, pretty much no chance of these tag titles changing hands, particularly not with Mania so close and with Damage Control having a pretty high profile spot heading into Mania.
Yeah.
After the match, Roxanne Perez attacked Valkyria, kind of paying off the weeks of frustration that have been.
That's good. I think she could be really good as a heel. She's so like squeaky clean as a babyface. I think I'm going to enjoy her more as a heel.
Yeah, this pretty well solidified the heel turn that they've kind of been teasing at. She draped Valkyria's arm over the bottom rope and stomped it like she was trying to break it. So it's pretty clear that this is very much supposed to be heel Roxanne.
Nice. I'm excited for it.
After that was a singles match between Fallon Henley and Blair Davenport, where, surprisingly, for me at least, Fallon Henley got the win. The match was okay. I gave it a 73. There seemed to be some timing issues. It didn't affect it too much, but enough that it dropped the grade for me a little bit. The finish on this match had a little bit of shenanigans to kind of protect Blair, where Sol Ruka came back from injury and attacked Blair behind the ref's back, which is essentially how they cost her the match. After
a tiny
this,
bit of shenanigans?
Yeah, a little bit. It's good to see Sol Ruka back. She's been out for a while, and it seemed like they were getting ready to push her. Hopefully she gets the push that it seemed like she was going to get. After this, there were four story segments in a row. I graded them all together, even though they were for different things, because it was just like a big block of story.
Was that jarring?
What?
Was it jarring just to be like so much in a row that was not a match?
It just seemed like it was a way to get like various storylines going, continuing ahead of the main event, that just there wasn't. Because they were treating it like a PLE, there wasn't time to like do a bunch of small matches because they were doing these bigger matches. So overall for the four segments, I gave an 87. The first segment was Ariana Grace accepting a match against Gigi Dolin, with the stipulation being that if Grace wins, she gets to bring out Dolan's inner beauty and clean up her language.
Oh, please win. That's going
to
be good.
And she's almost guaranteed to win.
Yeah, that's good.
The second segment was No Quarter Catch Crew cutting a promo about the Heritage Cup. They are keeping their Catch Claws gimmick going by saying that any of them can defend the cup, even though Dempsey was the one that won it.
I like that.
William Regal showed up and cut a promo aimed at Dempsey, who is Regal's son, obviously. They did not acknowledge the fact that they are father and son, but Regal essentially pleaded with him to defend the cup with honor, and Dempsey said that he would defend it better than Regal ever could. After that, we got a backstage segment with Metaphor, where it looked like they were going to run back the Noam Dar being depressed about not having the Heritage Cup gimmick. And instead, when Lash Legend tried to get him to look at her to talk him out of being sad, he popped straight out of it and was just super excited and said on to bigger and better things. So it's probably for the best. I wouldn't be shocked if Metaphor's primed for a call-up.
I hope after Mania, yeah, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. And then the fourth of these segments was Mr. Stone watching a backstage video of Lexus King disparaging his children. And Von Wagner tried to convince him to let him help, but Stone insisted on going it alone against Lexus King in the coming weeks.
He's a good wrestler, man. He doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good wrestler. He's on the smaller end, and he's a good talker, so I understand why he's getting the manager treatment. But
right.
He could do the underdog thing pretty well if they let him.
I think so.
The main event of the night was between Tony D'Angelo and Carmella Hayes in a number one contender match for the NXT title at Stand and Deliver. I liked this match a lot. I gave it an 88. It was pretty back and forth. At the closing moments of the match, Trick Williams' music hit. Carmella got distracted and ended up losing to D'Angelo. Afterwards, D'Angelo got on the mic and said, I'm sorry for that stunt that I pulled, but I'm a giving Don. So, Carmella, I got you a little present. And then he actually brought out Trick Williams. So, as expected, this set up D'Angelo against Dragunov for the title. And it set up Hayes and Williams just in a feud going in to Stand and Deliver. So,
makes perfect sense to me. It's great.
Overall for the show, I gave it an 81.14%.
Nice.
On to Dynamite. This is the March 6th episode of Dynamite. Worth noting that Dynamite got a new opening theme song and a new look this week.
That's right. Shout out to Mikey Ruckus.
Indeed. I saw a lot of people online complaining that this new look reminded them of NXT 2.0, but I actually think that it brings the visuals of Dynamite more in line with what they're doing with Collision, with that like throwback feel.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
I liked it. I see why somebody would say like, oh, NXT 2.0, but I don't think that that's quite what it is.
Right. Dynamite was pretty good. I saw almost all of it.
Okay. Yeah. So we opened with an interview segment between Tony Schiavone and Swerve, focusing on what comes next for Swerve. This was a way to kind of set up what's going on with Swerve's loss as a result of Hangman tapping out, and ultimately ended up setting up a tag match immediately after this segment between Matt Taven and Mike Bennett and Swerve and Joe. Undisputed Kingdom got involved because Wardlow has a title match as a byproduct of winning the scramble at Revolution. So, made sense. Kept all the plates spinning. I thought the segment was good. I gave it a 90. While Undisputed Kingdom tried to delay the tag match, Tony Khan set the tag match for right away. So we got immediately into that tag match right after that. That tag match, as I said, was Matt Taven and Mike Bennett versus Swerve Strickland and Samoa Joe. Swerve and Joe won the match. I thought it was a really good match. I gave it a 93. There was a really fun spot at the beginning of this where Joe did his, you know, where he gets somebody up on the middle rope and just like walks away when they go to jump off.
Yes.
But he walked away from, I believe it was Taven was jumping off, and he missed Joe because Joe walked away and hit Mike Bennett with a drop kick. So it was a nice.
There was they played up Bennett as the guy taking all the shtick in this match for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice variation on that spot. It's one of Joe's more fun spots
for sure.
Once Swerve got into the match, he pretty much single-handedly disposed of the Ring of Honor tag champs by himself, and he stared down Joe after the match.
I don't love that.
Yeah, it is what it is, but it is tough when you've got two singles guys who don't get along against an actual tag team that's holding belts. And
in a faction that's being pushed.
Right, which they continued pushing the faction after the match. Strickland was staring down Joe. Wardlow showed up. Strickland turned his back on Joe and got choked out for turning his back on him.
Told him not to.
We got the announcement that Joe versus Wardlow for the title is set for Big Business next week.
Probably a good idea.
The next match of the night was an FTW championship match between Hook and Brian Cage. Hook retained his FTW title. This match was also very good. I gave it an 88. Mm-hmm. A bit of an interesting choice doing a match like this when Sting's last match was also very much a weapons-heavy hardcore match. But Sting's last match was a more of a spectacle, I think.
Right.
And this managed to feel different enough, I felt, that it didn't detract from it that much.
It's weird. There's a lot more hardcore matches on all these programs. And, I mean, if we weren't paying such close attention, I don't know that I would even notice it as much.
Yeah. We followed that with Killswitch versus Daddy Magic. This match was fine. It was essentially just a squash. I gave it a 70. After this match was the real meat of why this match happened, which is that Christian Cage had Killswitch and Nick Wayne attack Daddy Magic. Danny Garcia got involved, and when they were going to leave, Adam Copeland showed up and chased Christian Cage off and made an announcement in the parking lot after Christian Cage got away that they would be fighting for the TNT title in an I Quit match at Big Business.
That's exciting. I'm very curious what they do with that.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how many of these kind of money matches that they're doing for free on TV at Big Business are actually going to, you know, pay off with title changes and things like that. But I guess we'll see.
I mean, the people should go home happy because you're getting that pretty obvious return in Boston. So,
right.
Couldn't be any more obvious. I watch them not do it. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, not do it and then, like, do it next week.
Right, right. Like, bring back, like, D-Lo on commentary or something. I don't know.
That's funny. It's big business.
Yeah.
After this, we got a Young Bucks segment where they were claiming to have two big announcements. They made a big show of suspending Hangman and firing Kenny from specifically the Elite, not the company.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it was humorous. And then before they could make the second announcement, Eddie Kingston showed up. He threw some money at them for some sort of fine that he had, and he got jumped. And then Okada's music hit, and just when it looked like Okada was going to be siding with Eddie, he ended up hitting Eddie with the Rainmaker, and the Bucks announced that Okada is the newest member of the Elite. I gave the segment an 86, but I do question the logic behind making one of the most over new signees a heel right out the gate.
I loved it.
I mean, I like the idea of him being heel. I just don't know that you're going to get heel reactions from the fans. And
if he talks crap on Kenny until Kenny can actually come back, assuming he can, that would be the payoff, I would think. Just to know in the future Okada Omega would happen again, I think is enough for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Okada versus Jay White and things like that. That's definitely the setup here. It just felt like
right. You
could probably get there without making him heel and trying to go against what the fans are going to respond to him with. But the segment was good, nonetheless.
We'll have to see. I have something on that a little later, so we'll see.
After this was a singles match between Chris Statlander and Riho. Riho ended up getting the win on this match. I thought the match was really good. I gave it a 91. They played up the size disparity between the two of them really well. And both of them played their roles in the match perfectly. And the commentary tried to sell the finish on this like it was a byproduct of Stokely trying to get Statlander to use a weapon. But there was, it wasn't like he tossed her a weapon and she turned her back on Riho and got pinned. There was, like, you know, another, like, half a minute of interaction between the two of them before Riho got what was essentially a roll-up. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if I buy that explanation, but that's the explanation that we got. And the match was good, so I guess I don't care that commentary wanted me to believe that it was all Stokely's fault and not just that Riho got the better of Stat.
They're fools. Stokely does nothing wrong. Riho is definitely getting a lot of wins as of late. it should turn into a title shot at some point.
She is getting a lot of wins. She's also getting really good crowd reactions, despite, like, not really being around that much.
Yeah, the crowd missed her.
After this, we got an announcement that Riho would fight Willow next week, and we also got an announcement that Darby Allin versus Jay White would be happening next week on Big Business.
Nice.
Then we got the main event between Kyle Fletcher and Will Ospreay. This match was phenomenal. It was so good.
Of course it was.
Did you see this match?
No, it's the one thing I saved it to go
good
back
God.
To.
Make sure you watch this match. Will Ospreay got the win.
I will.
Not surprisingly, Will Ospreay got the win. I gave this match a 97, Tim.
Ooh,
a 97.
Nice.
And I'll tell you this. There was only one match that I've seen within a week of this that was anywhere near that, and it was on Revolution, and it was also a Will Ospreay match. But I won't tell you what I rated that match because we'll shoot that other episode for the pay-per-view, and I'll tell you there.
Sounds good. Yeah, no, that match sounded amazing as well.
Yeah, it was. But after this match, to close out the show, Bryan Danielson showed up and had a stare down with Ospreay, which felt like it was teasing what would likely be the next big match for the two of them. Overall, on the backs of that 97 at the end, this show got an overall score of 87.86%.
That is fantastic. That is great. I love hearing that. Well, I guess it's time for some Impact Wrestling, some TNA. You ready for it?
Always.
Always. Well, on March 7th, 2024, we kicked off our show with Mustafa Ali taking on Kevin Knight in an X Division title match. This match was really, really good. And there's this great spot where they were leapfrogging each other, and Ali went to do a leapfrog, and Kevin Knight just jumped higher and drop kicked him straight down into the mat. It was brutal.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, it was really impressive. Ali did do a top rope backstabber, which was pretty gross. And the point of this match was to take Kevin Knight out of the pay-per-view match. He did his 450 splash finisher to Kevin Knight's arm that was being held by the Good Hands, and thus taking him out of Sacrifice, which was the next night. We won't be tackling Sacrifice here, but Sacrifice sounded pretty sweet as well. But Ali continuing his heel political gimmick, it's very good. This match got an 85 out of me. I loved it.
85 is pretty good for you.
Yeah, this was definitely one of the better matches of the whole week for me. And it was just like kind of a grudge match. It wasn't even about the title as much. They were just, everybody's been in everyone else's face in these groups. We follow that up with the second match of Ash by Elegance, who is taking on Angel Blue, which is a complete jobber. And her hype man is so great. He just doesn't let anybody do any announcements. He has her get in the ring. He asks the opponent to kiss her boot. And when the opponent refuses to kiss the boot, she gets really upset and acts like she's been disrespected. But the thing that I like is Ash by Elegance just literally beats the living hell out of her opponent. She just hits them so incredibly hard. It's a pretty good gimmick, especially for a woman, especially for a beautiful woman, you know, doing more the diva kind of gimmick. And then, like a switch, she just goes completely ham on her opponent. It's great. I ended up giving this a 79. The match itself was, since it was a squash, it wasn't a lot to write home about, but it was good. Next up, we have the Good Hands taking on the Time Splitters, which is Kushida and Alex Shelley. This match was really cool. Jason Hotch definitely has a great Blue Thunder Bomb. It is something that it has to be seen. He gets really good height. I know he was doing it to a smaller guy in Kushida, but it was super good. And this match was very back and forth. It did come about because of a backstage bit with Kevin Knight where Alex Shelley says no one has his back. So he said, all right, Kushida, go to the ring with me and prove that you have my back. And they did. They were able to defeat the Good Hands, which will tie into a story a little bit later.
Also ties into the opening match story.
Yep. Yeah, they weave the Motor City Machine Guns throughout this whole card, which was pretty good. Next up, we get Masha Slamovich taking on Danny Luna. This was a pretty good match. This match came about because Danny Luna and Jody Threat are getting a tag title match the next night at Sacrifice, and Jody Threat did defeat Killer Kelly, so Danny Luna going after Masha makes sense, and Danny Luna does defeat her. She does the Luna Landing, her finisher, which is a fireman's carry, into kind of like the Death Valley Driver motion, but it ends up as a seated powerbomb. The way she does it, it's really, really smooth, and I do like it quite a bit. Pretty good back-and-forth match. I gave it an 82. I really enjoyed the match. Then we follow that up with Alan Angels taking on PCO, because PCO interrupted his talk show segment with Khan last week. Alan Angels, he can't buy a win, but he's doing pretty good. It's still to his credit for being a cruiserweight going up against PCO, he just never stops coming at him. He just gets his butt kicked. So this is a pretty standard quick match. I gave it a 77. Nothing to really write home about.
And to be fair, PCO's not human.
He's not human. That's the word on the street. That's what the kids keep telling me.
Yeah, he's not human.
We did get, I skipped this actually by accident. There was a Steve Macklin promo from his hotel over Zoom because he didn't want to go to the arena and get Nick Nemeth in his face. Of course, Nick Nemeth shows up at his hotel and beats him up. And he places the laptop down so you can see that it was him. And he puts the Do Not Disturb sign on his face. It was pretty dumb, but whatever. It was fine. We also get promos backstage with the Good Hands, where they get taken off of Sacrifice because Ali is mad at them because they lost to the Time Splitters. And he fires them from the pay-per-view and hires the Grizzled Young Veterans to take their spot, which is pretty awesome. And the Good Hands plan it up like, are we just going to take that? And it's like, yeah, you're going to take it. So I just like that this is interweaving with a bunch of different storylines, especially going forward. EY came out. He did a promo at this point where he's talking on the system since he's got the match with Moose. Very basic promo. I love EY, but this was very basic. And it just ended up with him getting beat up. It was okay. And then it was time for our main event. Do you want to know who took on Josh Alexander this week in the main event?
Let's hear it.
Dirty Dango.
Ooh, your boy.
Dirty Dango. Dirty Dango, who had a great segment earlier where he was outside and he said some of the funniest shit I've ever seen in his I Hate Pro Wrestling promos that he does, including they were like outside in a park. And he's like, is this like the Hardy compound? Are we doing the Hardy thing? And it's just like all these ridiculous shits that he says. So good. But this match actually was amazing, and almost completely Dirty Dango had his number the entire match. You would never have thought it in a million years. Classic pro wrestling, where Josh Alexander hurt his knee or his leg running to the outside, so Dango just capitalized on it, and Josh Alexander didn't look like he was in control at all. He does end up winning the match, of course. Josh Alexander cannot lose to Dirty Dango. But the match was really good, really not what I expected it to be, and I gave it an 83 overall.
Very nice.
Yeah. So that's the end for Impact. I gave the show a 79.62%. Gotta love it. Now we're moving on to Rampage, which has Chris Jericho on commentary, if you care. This is the March 8th edition. We kick things off with Trent Beretta teaming with Orange Cassidy to take on Kip Sabian and The Butcher. And this is to solidify that the best friends are great still. Nothing is wrong with them. And Trent and Orange can team up while Chuck is hurt. Pretty good match. Pretty back and forth. They did end up getting the strong zero on Butcher for the win. Really good job by Orange Cassidy selling his injuries. He's got tape pretty much on every part of his body that you can see. And just a good match in general. Next up is a TBS championship match with Julia Hart taking on Robin Renegade. The house rule for the match was no top rope at all. Didn't matter. This match was great. It was focused on chain wrestling and submission wrestling. Everybody looked really good. And I thought this match was solid. I gave it an 82. Wasn't really in question that Julia Hart was going to win. I think everybody kind of got their stuff in, so it was good.
That's fair. Are either of them really top rope wrestlers anyways?
No, but it eliminated one of both of their finishers, essentially.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice, but the commentary team kind of put it over good. And I was like, that's fine. That just means they're going to focus on their submissions, which I love Julia Hart's.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Julia tends to want to put people away with the Heartless anyways, right? So.
Yes, normally, yes. Next up, we get Pentagon El Cerro Miedo taking on Action Andretti. Pretty back and forth match. I feel like all the top flight guys are very interchangeable. Them and Action Andretti. Like, I don't know. There's not a lot of difference between them. Is that wrong
Please,
for me to feel
that way? Action Andretti has that water bottle trick he keeps doing.
That's true. He does have that going for him.
You know, he won his debut match against Chris Jericho, and now he just does water bottle tricks, and he's the third man in a team that isn't about him.
That's pretty much it. And, of course, Jericho did bring up that loss. So, I appreciate them keeping that going, but there's not much to this. But the match was actually pretty decent. Pretty back and forth, pretty stiff match. Pentagon does win with the Fear Factor. I gave this an 84. Pretty solid wrestling here. Next up, we do get the rest of Top Flight in a match. It's Top Flight versus Commander and Brian Keith versus Private Party in a three-way tag match. Really good way to put over all the tag teams that are in AEW. They're using this to kind of build all night long. They really did a good job talking about the tag tournament that's coming up. The wrestling was really good here. I was getting pretty mad at Bryce Rensburg for counting pinfalls on the people who are not the legal man. It was just pissing me off. I mean, it wasn't the final pinfall, but yeah, I was like, dude, he's not even legal. What are we doing? And it wasn't even so confusing. Like, I followed this shit. Yeah, I wasn't digging it. But otherwise, the match was super good with all these guys in it. Of course it is. And they were able to make it make sense. There was a great moment where Brian Keith was kind of fighting his way back, and he's like, ah, crap, and he had to tag in Private Party, or no, Top Flight, because he had no other choice. Commander was down. So, you know, it was good storytelling from that point of view, but that was about it. I gave that match an 83, so it was all right.
Who ended up getting the win on that?
Top Flight did.
It's wild to me how many different tag team partners we can manage to give Commander over the weeks.
I didn't think he looked bad with Brian Keith. Maybe that could be something. All right, so that's it for Rampage, and I give Rampage an 82.25 for the week. Then we move on to the 8th. We're going to go to Friday Night SmackDown now, and this one kicked off with a tag match that I thoroughly enjoyed. It was Randy Orton and Kevin Owens taking on Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. There was so many promos on this show. I'm not going to go over all of them. But Logan Paul had come out, did a basic promo, talked about his sponsorship of the ring for WrestleMania with his prime drink. Goes back and forth, talks shit on everybody. Ends up getting beat up by Randy Orton, and this match happens. Owens and Orton were a pretty good team. And they end up winning this match, and they win it with a move that they made seem like an accident. They really sold this well, which was the pop-up RKO, where Owens pops him up for the pop-up powerbomb over his shoulders, and Randy hits him with the RKO on the way down. And they just kind of like looked at each other like, that was cool. We should do that shit again.
That's sick.
So everybody was super hyped after that move. Everybody was loving it. And of course, Logan Paul returns and beats the hell out of everybody again. So, it was one big long segment, but it really did a good job of advancing several stories for Mania. We followed this up with Bobby Lashley taking on Karrion Kross. This match was okay. It was pretty back and forth. It was actually pretty hard hitting, but I don't know. Kross can't get over, it seems. I don't know what is up. We are trying everything here. I want him to be so much more than he is. I don't think the Final Testament, or whatever the hell they're called, is going to be the answer. This match ends up getting thrown out, and I gave it a 79. It's still a very good match. It just didn't accomplish a ton, unfortunately.
I think Kross is having a hard time getting over because they keep putting him in feuds with guys that are his size.
Right. Put him in the feud with the LWO and let him toss him around kind of
thing. Yeah, it's the big man problem, right? If you put two big guys against each other, you don't want to kill either of their big guy status by having one of them get squashed.
It's true, but...
So, like, I don't know. They need to feed small guys to the Final Testament. Like, small, legitimate guys just need to get destroyed.
I almost feel like the Street Profits and the AOP are getting over better. And Karrion Kross and even Lashley, because, I don't know, Lashley doesn't feel like he's being positioned in a good way. I feel like the lower general people of this team are doing better than the higher-ups.
Yeah, it's the same problem on Lashley's end, right? Like, it's the big man problem. He's being paired up against somebody that he can't squash, so it makes him look not as dominant as he looks when he's positioned against guys that he can just, like, ragdoll around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both of them want to be in Drew McIntyre's position, and neither of them are.
That's true. That's very true. Well, hopefully they figure something out with them going forward. But our third match starts out of nowhere. Nobody was ready for this next match, and it was the biggest pop of the night, aside from The Rock. And that is Tiffany Stratton, whose music hit and the crowd lost their freaking minds. Huge pop for her versus Meechan. This match was not as back and forth as you would have thought. Tiffany Stratton puts her away with the prettiest moonsault ever. I gave it a 79. She is so over. She can do no wrong, I feel. I feel like she's going to go right to the moon.
The crowd loves Tiffy time.
Tiffy time, you know? Next up, we got our final match of the night, which was Angel Garza taking on Dragon Lee. And this match was very good. This felt like a classic luchador match. I was having a good time watching this. Not too much shenanigans in it. And Dragon Lee does end up getting the win here. I gave it an 81. It was a pretty solid match. And I liked that, Angel Garza got a little bit of shine on him getting what is technically the main event for the night. Because we still have this giant promo to come, which was the Rock Roman Rollins Cody promo. I don't know if WWE did this on purpose, but this promo went long and it ended on TV right when it was really starting to fire off. And I'm pretty sure they put the full segment on YouTube to get like a billion views, which is very, very smart. That's big business.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, you like that, don't you? But this promo was very good. Again, The Rock coming out again, still doing his bit. Roman doing his bit. I'm really digging Roman a lot in these promos where he just kind of stands back and then just cocky, kind of swagger, just says whatever the hell he wants. We get our answer. There was a Diarrhea Dwayne chant, which The Rock did not like. This really just needed more time, though. It was good, but everybody got in everybody's face. Everybody got heated. When the TV started to cut it off, it cut it off just shortly after Cody slaps The Rock in the face and they accept the challenge. So it was a long, it was good. It was a 20-minute promo, which felt very fast. It felt 5 minutes had passed. Everybody got their stuff in. Nobody was overpowered by The Rock. The Rock was just in there with everyone else. It was good. I gave the promo a 93. It's the weakest of the ones The Rock has done since he came back, but it was a very important one. Story-wise, heading into Mania. So that is it for SmackDown. That'll give SmackDown an 83.2% overall, which has felt weird to me, but it's largely off of that promo, much like you and your Ospreay match. Getting something so big on there is huge. And
makes a real difference.
It makes a world of difference, absolutely. Now I'm going to move on to Collision. This is the March 9th edition of Collision. And it kicks off with a great match. Did you catch this Collision at all?
Bits and pieces.
All right, well, it's kicking off with one of the best matches I've seen in a little bit here. Bryan Danielson taking on Shane Taylor. I love Shane Taylor so much. Dude is so solid. They hit each other incredibly hard this entire match. Bryan Danielson, his chest was like mincemeat by the end of this. Just every blood vessel had been broken. Really hard chops, really back and forth. There was a great moment where it was kind of like a lull, and Danielson just glared over at Nigel, which I loved. And Nigel was like, why are you looking at me? It was great. And Shivani was like, what? You going to let him do that? He goes, oh, I don't want to be involved with that man. I love that they're keeping that going. And Nigel said, I don't want to be. He also said that man has a face like a slapped ass, which is really great.
That's awesome.
Nigel's commentary makes every Danielson match so much better. Also, side note, I always watch these things with the subtitles on, and my Sling, I watch these on Sling, and their subtitles for the knee from Danielson. They called it the Bouncy Ducky Love Knee, which I thought was a great name and was worth mentioning.
That's fairly funny.
Yes, it is. This was good. I gave this a 94. This match was insanely good. Really good back and forth. Shane Taylor looks like $1 million off of this match. And I think it's definitely going to be a tough one to beat this week. We did get Will Ospreay coming out at the end of this match, talking to Danielson. He said, it seems like you had something you wanted to say to me. Why don't I save you the trouble? Why don't we have that match everybody wants? And they basically, by the end of the night, will confirm Ospreay versus Danielson for the Dynasty pay-per-view.
Dynasty pay-per-view is, it's got to be good.
They're building it correctly. We will see. It's so far, so good, though.
Is there any way that Danielson versus Ospreay isn't, like, match of the night?
Only if there's an injury in the middle of it. That's the only way. All right, so after this, we moved on to something I was very excited for, because I hadn't realized this was the debut of this. Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, yours and my EVPs, and Kazuchika Okada, debuting as a trio, taking on John Cruz, Liam Gray, and Adrian Alanis, which, what a good jobber name, Adrian Alanis. This was how you do a squash match. Nick Jackson started in the ring, quickly tags out, so Okada comes in. Okada defeats every single member of the other team. He keeps throwing them into their corner so the other ones will tag in, and then he defeats them as well. Very good rainmaker here. Ducking a clothesline, catching the guy's arm, and just spinning him real quick. And the guy was small, so it looked really good. That, I think, was Liam Gray. I do like the intro as they were coming out. The Young Bucks kind of had a coin in their hand, and when they dropped it, the music hit. It was very well-timed.
Nice.
There's a lot of shenanigans that happen. So this is the one complaint I'll have about AEW, just in general, for this week. I feel like too much shit happens after matches, to where I feel like everything's overbooked beyond belief. Although I popped pretty good for this one. You get Eddie Kingston coming back in, and he gets beat up, of course, because he's outnumbered. Then you get Penta coming in, and of course, he starts getting beat up as well. But then you get the biggest pop of the night when Pac returns and gets in Okada's face. I was pretty happy.
It's good to see Pac back. Maybe he'll get a sustained run this time instead of having like three matches and then disappearing for a year again.
I know, that's unfortunate for him, but he looked good here. He looked really good until he squared up with Okada and stared up at his neck. The size disparity is insane. Then we moved on to what could be the match of the night, maybe, I don't know. Mariah May taking on Trish Adora. It's not the match of the night, but it was very good. Trish Adora did a German suplex from her knees on the mat, which was fantastic. It was such a cool move to see. Really impressive because she is a lot taller than Mariah May. Nigel had another great line in here, keeping up his love for Mariah May. He goes, look, I like Trish a lot, but I adore May. I was like, oh you. And Mariah May, of course, is doing the Toni Storm lookalike gimmick after Mariah May puts Trish Adora away. She does win the first ever Tony Award, which they made sure to say was T-O-N-I. And after that, Deonna Purrazzo came out and beat up everybody and then got beat up herself. It was a fine match. I gave it an 82. Just a lot of the same, though. Very overbooked ending, again.
Yeah, it's like they don't know how to do storyline without tying it directly to the end of a match.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. Our next match has the same problem. It's Nick Wayne versus Adam Priest. Decent match. Nothing to write home about. Nick Wayne looked like a cocky, shit-eating heel, which he is, and he was very good at it. There was 75,000 people at ringside, because it's the patriarchy. I gave it a 73. And Copeland shows up, of course, afterwards, and starts fighting with everybody, gets in the ring with a big, long case that has the word spike written on it. And he opens the case so only Christian can see what's inside. And Christian backs away from the ring and makes everybody leave. So I don't know what is going on with that. I doubt it's Spike
Dudley. I was hoping that it would just be Spike Dudley.
I was hoping, but why would you keep Spike Dudley in that case?
He opens the case, he shows Christian, and Christian's like, We don't fuck with Spike Dudley.
No, you don't. That not LSD? Little Spike Dudley? No way. I don't know what they were doing here. It felt very bizarre. The whole, we can't see what's in the case. They have to pay off the case, and it has to be amazing. I don't know what it would be. We will see, I guess.
They just never tell us.
That'd be great.
It's just the golden glow from the Pulp Fiction case. You just never get to know.
That's if they add that in post, the golden glow, that'd be amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's I guess, good setup for Boston, but I don't know. It was weird. Then we get a Jericho match taking on Titan, which is spelled like Titan, but it's Titan. The crowd was super into Titan. Strong finish. Again, an overbooked ending of a match. But what I appreciated was Jericho doing the Lionheart gimmick, largely doing older moves that he can still do. And this felt like I was watching an old school luchador match as well, which is pretty cool because Jericho can't move that fast anymore. And he predominantly did older moves and kept going for the Lion Tamer, which was great. Jericho does get the win here as well. Pretty good match, though. It did end of overbooked again. We got the run-in from the Gates of Agony after the match, beating up Jericho, which calls Hook down to the ring, and Hook does the save. It's fine.
Just a run-in after every match.
Almost. So
how do you book a match without a run-in? That's what I need to know.
I have yet to figure it out. I'm checking with Tony Khan. It looks like it cannot be done.
We got a good...
Not on Collision, apparently. FTR came out and then talked about the tag tournament, said they're going to enter it, even though they've been on kind of a losing streak and they feel bad about that. And the Infantry came out to confront them, which I was super happy about. And the Infantry was pretty over, considering they were going up against FTR on the microphone. They did some good callbacks to the Revival. They're like, hey, your career could really use a revival. And they're like, say yeah. And they're like doing the song. They were like, oh no. But it was pretty good. And then this led to our second to last match, which was Mystico taking on Angelico. And commentary didn't know if they wanted to call him Angelico or Angelico. I'm pretty sure both are correct, honestly. But this was another traditional lucha match. Very near, really close near falls the whole time. There was a great near fall that Angelico did on Mystico with a Mahistra cradle that was so tight that he literally, like, he popped off the canvas, but he really didn't break the pin. Like, he got up, but not really, not convincingly. I like stuff like that. Decent match. Mystico does end up getting the win here. They kind of botched the finish, but they were able to save it and bring it back in, which I appreciated. They kind of screwed up the maneuver that led to the tap out, essentially, here. Gotcha. And they were able to bring it back and dial it back in and do it and make it look like it made sense. Decent match. And then finally, our main event. Guess what? It's a hardcore match.
What? A hardcore match?
Dude, it's like Attitude Era all over again over here with these hardcore matches on all these shows. And it's not just AEW, but yeah. House of Black taking on Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, and Mark Briscoe in an Atlanta street fight. The whole setup of this match was Mark Briscoe trusts Jay Lethal, but not Jeff Jarrett. And Jeff Jarrett is basically the opposite. And can they trust him? This match, again, has a million people in it, but it is two big stables kind of going at it. They almost set Sanjay Dutt on fire. It was kind of fun that, and there was a lot of crazy spots. It's worth watching this. I think they did a really good job. Just making it believable, but there were so many crazy spots. There's a part where Mark Briscoe gets thrown off the top rope by Brody King, and he goes over the table and onto a pile of chairs that are on the floor. And it was the grossest noise because I was like, I saw it coming, and I'm like, please don't. There's no reason for this. There was a lot of fighting. Karen Jarrett got involved. Sanjay got involved. And the person who turned the tide was absolutely Julia Hart coming out. She got everybody distracted. She took care of Karen Jarrett, gave her the black mist in the eyes. It's amazing how over Julia Hart is. And just smart. She brought out a lighter fluid, which would come into the finish with a fire on a table.
Got to put fire on a table.
Got to. And it was funny because they were trying to get as much lighter fluid on it as possible, and they lit it, and it just really wasn't going too convincingly. It was like all in the center. They end up putting Mark Briscoe through it, power bombing him off the apron to the floor through this table. And it wasn't a lot of fire, but I'm pretty convinced he got burned pretty good. It was just like everywhere he landed, this fire engulfed him. And you do see Malakai pull him up really quick and kind of brush him off in the most nonchalant way he can do it and roll him in the ring and pin him, because that was the end of the match. But he was absolutely probably on fire here. Really sick. But this match was really good. If you're into a hardcore match, this one was fantastic. Lots of good spots, lots of tables, lots of hardware. So it is exactly what you would probably want. I gave this match an 86. Very solid for 70,000 people running around ringside.
Yeah, that's not
so bad. That right. So that gives Collision an 83.14%. So, show ratings. Who's got your win this week?
My show of the week for the first half of the week was AEW Dynamite at 87.76%.
That is pretty awesome. For me, also because of this promo on SmackDown, SmackDown does win, but I do want to point out that it beat Collision. Collision was 83.14. SmackDown was 83.2. Very close. That's why the math matters, you know?
Shoot math
here. Now, can you please tell me your top five matches for the week?
My top five matches of the week for the first half of the week, starting at number five, which is the opposite of what I did last week. I thought about it halfway in. Starting at number five with a 90 is Dominic Mysterio versus Gunther.
Yeah, it was good.
Then we go to number four, which was also a 90. I just made an arbitrary decision about which one was slightly better, even though the math was equivalent.
I think
so.
That's fair.
Our number four for me is Becky Lynch versus Nia Jax. Number three with a 91 is Chris Statlander versus Riho. Number two with a 93 is Matt Taven and Mike Bennett versus Swerve Strickland and Samoa Joe. And number one, obviously, with a 97 is Kyle Fletcher versus Will Ospreay.
Yeah, I can't wait to go back for that. That is fantastic. Well, I have a similar problem over here with my top five. I had two matches that qualified for number five, which was Randy Orton and Kevin Owens versus Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. Also, the Pentagon match against Action Andretti also scored an 84, but I'm going to give it to the Randy Orton match. I just enjoyed that match, and I think the pop-up RKO is what's going to put it over here. Number four was Mustafa Ali versus Kevin Knight with an 85. Number three, also with an 85, and I like that this happened, is the Elite, the new Elite, taking on three jobbers. Because I think this match did so much and set up so much, including the pops for Pac and everybody returning.
Got jobbers in your top five.
Isn't that fun? I mean, they do. We have these categories, and I tell you, this segment checked a lot of boxes. So, number two is the House of Black taking on Lethal, Jarrett, and Briscoe in that street fight. Gave it an 86. And by a country mile with 94, Bryan Danielson taking on Shane Taylor was my match of the week. Well, that is it for us here at Math of the Match podcast. Thanks to everybody who's been checking us out. We do have our Twitter at Math of the Match if you want to go check us out there. You can also shoot us an email, mathofthematch@gmail.com. If you have any suggestions on how we could shoot math a little better, that's fine. But you're wrong, and we're going to do it this way. So that's that. I'm pretty good over here, Lawrence. You got anything you want to say to the people? You want to send them home happy?
Shoot math for life.